Chapter 30. Beyond the Oak. With Fael holding his head beneath her breasts, Perrin lost track of how long he cried. Images of his family flashed in his thoughts. His father smiling as he showed him how to hold a bow. His mother singing while she spun wool. Adora and Dazelle teasing him when he shaved the first time. Pate wide-eyed at a gleeman during Sunday long ago. Pictures of graves, cold and lonely, in a row. He wept until there were no more tears in him. When he finally pulled back, the two of them were alone, except for Scratch, washing himself atop the ale barrel. He was glad the others had not remained to watch him. Fael was bad enough. In a way, he was glad she had stayed. He only wished she had not seen or heard. Taking his hands in hers, Fael sat in the next chair. She was so beautiful, with her slightly tilted eyes, large and dark, and her high cheekbones. He did not know how he was going to be able to make up to her for the way he had treated her these last few days. No doubt she would find a means to make him pay for it. "Have you given up the notion of surrendering to the White Cloaks?" she asked. There was no hint in her voice that she had just watched him cry like a baby. "It seems it wouldn't do any good. They'll be after Rand's father and Matt's, whatever I do. My family." He quickly loosened his grip on her hands, but she smiled instead of wincing. "I have to get Master Luhan and his wife free, if I can. And Matt's mother and sisters. I promised him I would look after them, and do what I can about the Trollocs." Maybe this Lord Luke had some ideas. At least the waygate was blocked. No more would come through the ways. He especially wanted to do something about the Trollocs. "I can't manage any of that if I let them hang me."
"I'm very glad to see that," she told him dryly. "Any more fool notions about sending me away?"
"No." He braced himself for the storm, but she simply nodded as if the one word were what she expected and all she wanted. A small thing, nothing worth arguing over. She was going to make him pay large.
"We are five, Perrin. Six, if Loyal is willing. And if we can find Tamal Thor and Abel Cawthon, are they as good with a bow as you?"
"Better," he said truthfully. "Much better." She gave him a slight, disbelieving nod.
"That will make eight. A beginning. Maybe others will join us. And then there's Lord Luke. He will probably want to take charge, but if he's not a crack brain, it won't matter. Not everyone who took the Hunter's Oath is sensible, though. I've met some who think they know everything, and are stubborn as mules besides."
"I know." She looked at him sharply, and he managed to keep the smile off his face. "That you've met some like that, I mean. I saw a pair of them once, remember?"
"Oh, them. Well, we can hope Lord Luke is not a boasting liar."
Her eyes became intent, and her grip tightened on his hands, not uncomfortably, but as though she were trying to add her strength to his.
"You will want to visit your family's farm, your home. I will come with you, if you let me."
"When I can, Fael." "Not now, though. Not yet." If he looked at those graves below the apple trees now. It was strange. He'd always taken his own strength for granted, and now it turned out that he was not strong at all. Well, he was done with weeping like a babe. It was past time to be doing something. First things first, finding Tam and Abel, I suppose.
Master Alvear put his head into the common room and came the rest of the way when he saw them sitting apart.
"There is an ogier in the kitchen," he told Perrin with a bemused look. "An ogier, drinking tea. The biggest cup looks..."
He held two fingers as though gripping a thimble.
"Maybe Marin could pretend Aiel walk in here every day, but she nearly fainted when she saw this Loyal. I gave her a double tot of brandy and she tossed it down like water. Nearly coughed herself to death. She doesn't take more than wine usually. I think she'd have drunk another if I'd have given it to her."
He pursed his lips and affected an interest in a non-existent spot on his long white apron.
"Are you all right now, my boy?"
I'm fine, sir, Perrin said hastily. Master Alvir, we cannot remain here much longer. Someone might tell the White Cloaks you sheltered me.
Oh, there are not many would do that. Not all the Coplands, and not some of the Congers even.
But he did not suggest they stay. Do you know where I can find Master Althor and Master Cawthon?
In the Westwood somewhere, usually, Bran said slowly. That's all I know for sure. They move about.
Locking his fingers over his broad belly, he tilted his gray-fringed head to one side.
You aren't leaving, are you? Well, I told Marin you would not, but she doesn't believe me. She thinks it best for you to go away. Best for you. And like most women, she's sure you will see things her way if she talks long enough.
Why, Master Alvir, Fael said sweetly, I, for one, have always found men to be sensible creatures who only need to be shown the wisest path once to choose it.
The mayor favored her with an amused smile.
You will be talking Perrin into going, then, I take it.
Marin's right. That is wisest if he wants to avoid a noose. The only reason to stay is that sometimes a man can't run.
No?
Well, no doubt you know best.
He ignored her sour look.
Come along, my boy. Let's tell Marin the good news. Set your teeth and hold on to your intentions because she won't give up trying to shift you.
In the kitchen, Loyal and the Aiel were cross-legged on the floor. There was certainly no chair in the inn big enough for the Ogier. He sat with an arm resting on the kitchen table, tall enough sitting to look Marin Alvir in the eye. Bran had exaggerated the smallness of the cup in Loyal's hands, though on second glance Perrin saw it was a white-glazed soup bowl. Mistress Alvir was still doing her best to pretend Aiel and Ogier were normal, bustling about with a tray of bread and cheese and pickles, making sure everyone ate. But her eyes did widen each time they landed on Loyal, though he tried to put her at ease with compliments for her baking. His tufted ears twitched nervously whenever she looked at him, and she gave him a little jump every time they did, then shook her head, the thick graying braid swaying vigorously. Given a few hours, they might send each other to bed with the shakes. Loyal heaved a deep bass sigh of relief at the sight of Perrin and set his cup, bowl, of tea on the table. But the next instant, his broad face sagged sadly.
I am sorry to hear your loss, Perrin. I share your grief. Mistress Alvir.
His ears twitched wildly, even without looking at her, and she gave another start.
Has been telling me you will go. Now there's nothing to keep you here. If you wish it, I will sing to the apple trees before we leave.
Bran and Marn exchanged startled looks, and the mayor actually reamed at his ear with a finger.
Thank you, Loyal. I will appreciate that, when there's time. But I have work to do before I can go.
Mistress Alvir set the tray on the table with a sharp click and stared at him, but he kept on laying out his plans, such as they were. Find Tam and Abel, and rescue the people the White Cloaks held. He did not mention Trollocs, though he had vague plans there, too. Perhaps not so vague. He did not mean to leave while there was a Trolloc or Murdrol alive in the Two Rivers. He fastened his thumbs behind his belt to keep from caressing his axe.
It won't be easy, he finished. I will appreciate your company, but I will understand if you want to go. This isn't your fight, and you have seen enough trouble through staying close to Emmonsfield folk. And you won't write much of your book here.
Here or there, it is the same fight, I think,
Loyal replied.
The book can wait. Perhaps I will have a chapter about you.
I said I would come with you, Gaul put in, without being asked. I did not mean until the journey grew hard. I owe you blood debt. Bane and Chiad looked questioningly at Fael, and when she nodded, added their decisions to remain too.
Stubborn, foolish, Mistress Alvir said. A lot of you. Very likely you will all end up on gallows if you live that long. You know that, don't you?
When they only looked at her, she untied her apron and lifted it over her head.
Well, if you are foolish enough to stay, I suppose I'd better show you where to hide.
Her husband looked surprised at her sudden surrender, but he recovered quickly.
I thought perhaps the old sick house, Marin. No one ever goes there now, and I think it still has most of its roof.
What was still called the new sick house, where people were taken to be tended if their illness was contagious, had stood east of the village, beyond Master Thane's mill, since Perrin was a small boy. The old one, in the Westwood, had been all but destroyed in a fierce windstorm back then. Perrin remembered it as half covered by vines and briars, with birds roosting in what was left of the thatch, and a badger's den under the back steps. It would be a good place to hide. Mistress Alvere gave Bran a sharp look, as though startled he had thought of it.
That will do, I suppose. For tonight, at least. That is where I will take them.
No need for you to do it, Marin. I can lead them easy enough, if Perrin doesn't remember the way.
Sometimes you forget you're the mayor, Bran. You attract eyes. People wonder where you're going and what you are up to. Why don't you stay here, and if anyone drops by, see they go away thinking everything is just as it should be. There's mutton stew in the kettle and lentil soup that just needs heating. Now don't mention the sick house to anyone, Bran. Best if no one even remembers it exists.
I am not a fool, Marin, he said stiffly.
I know you aren't, dear.
She patted her husband's cheek, but her fond look tightened as it shifted from Bran to the rest of them.
You do cause trouble, she muttered before handing out instructions.
They were to travel in smaller parties so as not to attract attention. She would cross the village by herself and meet them in the woods on the other side. The Aiel assured her they could find the lightning split oak she described, and slipped out by the back door. Perrin knew it, a huge tree a mile beyond the edge of the village, that looked as if it had been cleft down the middle by an axe, yet somehow continued to live, and even flourish. He was sure he could go straight to the sick house itself with no trouble, but Mistress Alvere insisted everyone meet at the oak.
You go wandering about by yourself, Perrin, and the light knows what you might stumble into.
She looked up at Loyal, standing now, his shaggy hair brushing the ceiling beams, and sighed.
I do wish there was something we could do about your height, Master Loyal. I know it is hot, but would you mind wearing your cloak, with the hood up? Even these days, most people will soon convince themselves they didn't see what they saw, if it isn't what they expect. But if they catch a glimpse of your face, not that you aren't quite handsome, I'm sure, but you'll never pass for Two Rivers folk.
Loyal's smile split his face in two beneath his wide snout of a nose.
The day doesn't seem too warm for a cloak at all, Mistress Alvere.
Fetching a light-knit shawl with blue fringe, she accompanied Perrin, Fael, and Loyal out to the stable-yard to see them off, and for a moment it appeared all their efforts at secrecy were doomed. Sen Bui, looking made from gnarled old roots, was examining the horses with beady eyes. Especially Loyal's tall horse, as big as one of Bran's Durans. Sen scratched his head, staring at the great saddle on the big horse. Those eyes widened when they caught sight of Loyal, and Sen's jaw flapped.
Trollic!
He managed to get out at last.
Don't be an old fool, Sen Bui, Marin said firmly, stepping off to one side, to pull the thatcher's attention with her.
Perrin kept his head down, studying his bow, and did not move.
Would I be standing on my own back doorstep with a trollic?
She gave a contemptuous sniff.
Master Loyal is an ogier, as you would know if you weren't a cantankerous goose who would rather complain than look at what's under his nose. Passing through, and with no time to be bothered by the likes of you. You be on about your business and leave our guests some peace. You know very well that Coronet Ellen has been after you for months about the poor work you did on her roof.
Sen mouthed the word ogier, silent and blinking. For a moment it seemed he might rouse himself into defense of his handiwork, but then his gaze shifted to Perrin and narrowed.
Him! It's him! They're after you, you young whelp rapscallion, running off with Aes Sedai and becoming a dark friend. That was when we had Trollocs before. Now you're beck and so are they. You're going to tell me that's coincidence? What's wrong with your eyes? You sick? You have some kind of sickness from off you've brought back to kill us all? As if Trollocs are not enough? The Children of the Light will settle you. See if they don't.
Perrin sensed Fael tensing and hastily put a hand on her arm when he realized she was drawing a knife. What did she think she was doing? Sen was an irascible old fool, but that was no reason for knives. She gave an exasperated toss of her head, but at least she left it at that.
That is enough, Sen, Marin said sharply. You keep this to yourself. Or have you started running to the White Cloaks with tails, like Hare and his brother Darl? I've my suspicions why the White Cloaks came rummaging through Bran's books. They took Six off with them and lectured Bran under his own roof about blasphemy. Blasphemy, of all things, because they didn't agree with what was in a book. You're lucky I don't make you replace those books for him. They burrowed through the whole inn like weasels, hunting for more blasphemous writings, they said, as if anyone would hide a book. Tumbled all the mattresses from the beds, upset my linen closets. You are lucky I didn't come haul you back here to put it all to rights again.
Sen drew in on himself a little more with each sentence, until he looked to be trying to pull his bony shoulders over his head.
I didn't tell them anything, Marin, he protested. Just because a man mentions, that is, I just happened to say, just in passing.
He shook himself, still avoiding her eye, but regaining some of his old manner.
I mean to take this up with the council, Marin. Him, I mean.
He pointed a gnarled finger at Perrin.
We're all in danger as long as he's here. If the children find out you're sheltering him, they might blame the rest of us. Upset closets won't be in it then.
This is women's circle business.
Marin rewrapped her shawl about her shoulders and moved to stand eye to eye with the Thatcher. He was a little taller than she, but her sudden air of grave formality gave her the edge. He spluttered, but she rode right over his attempts to slide a word in.
Circle business, Senbui. If you think it isn't, if you even dare think of calling me a liar, you go flapping your tongue. You breathe a word of women's circle business to anyone, including the village council.
The circle has no right interfering in council affairs, he shouted. And see if your wife doesn't have you sleeping in the barn and eating what your milk cows leave.
You think council takes precedence over circle? I'll send Day's Conger over to convince you different if you need convincing.
Sen flinched, as well he might. If Day's Conger was the wisdom, she would probably force foul-tasting concoctions down his throat every day for the next year. And Sen was too scrawny to stop her. Allsbet Luhan was the only woman in Emmonsfield larger than Days, and Days had a mean streak and a temper to go with it. Perrin could not imagine her as wisdom. Nynaeve would probably have a fit when she found out who had replaced her. Nynaeve had always believed she used sweet reason herself.
No need to get nasty, Marin, Sen muttered placatingly. You want me to keep quiet? I'll keep quiet. But women's circle or no, you're risking bringing the children down on all of us.
Marin merely raised her eyebrows, and after a moment he slunk away, grumbling under his breath.
Well done, Fael said when Sen disappeared around the corner of the inn. I think I need to take lessons from you. I'm not half so good at handling Perrin as you are with Master Alvir and that fellow.
She smiled at Perrin to show she was joking. At least, he hoped that was what it meant.
You have to know when to rein them short, the older woman replied absently, and when there's nothing to do but give them their head. Letting them have their way when it isn't important makes it easier to check them when it is.
She was frowning after Sen, not really paying attention to what she was saying, except maybe when she added,
and some should be tied in the stall and left there.
Perrin leaped in hastily. Fael certainly did not need any advice of this sort. Will he hold his tongue, do you think, Mistress Alvir? Hesitating, she said,
I believe he will. Sen was born with a sore tooth that's only gotten worse as he ages. But he isn't like Harry Coplin or that lot.
Still, she had hesitated.
We had best be moving, he said. No one argued.
The sun was higher than he had expected, past its midday height already, which meant most people were indoors for their dinner. The few still out, mainly boys minding sheep or cows, were busy eating what they had brought with them, wrapped up in a cloth,
too absorbed in their food and too far from the cart paths to pay much mind to anyone passing. Still, Loyal earned some stares despite the deep hood hiding his face. Even on stepper, Perrin came short of the Ogier's chest on his tall mount. To the people who saw them from a distance, they must have looked like an adult with two children, all on ponies, leading pack ponies. Certainly not a usual sight, but Perrin hoped that was what they thought they saw. Talk would draw notice. He had to avoid that until he got Mistress Luhan and the others free. If only Sen kept his peace. He kept the hood of his own cloak up, too. That might also cause talk, but not as much as if anyone saw his beard and realized he was definitely not a child. At least the day was not particularly warm. It almost felt like spring, not summer after Tyr. He had no trouble finding the split oak, the two halves leaning apart in a wide fork with the inner surface black and hardened like iron, the ground beneath the thick, spreading branches clear. Merely crossing the village was much shorter than going around, so Mistress Alvere was already waiting, shifting her shawl a trifle impatiently. The Aiel were there, too, squatting on the mulch of old oak leaves and squirrel-chewed acorn hulls, Gaul apart from the two women. The maidens and Gaul watched each other almost as closely as the surrounding woods. Perrin had no doubt they had managed to reach this spot unobserved. He wished he had that ability. He could stalk fairly well in the woods, but the Aiel did not seem to care if it was forest or farmland or city. When they did not want to be seen, they found a way not to be seen. Mistress Alvere insisted they go the rest of the way afoot, claiming the way was too overgrown for riding. Perrin did not agree, but dismounted anyway. No doubt it would not be comfortable leading folk on horseback while on foot. In any case, his head was full of plans. He needed a look at the White Cloak camp up at Watch Hill before deciding how to rescue Mistress Luhan and the others. And where were Tam and Abel hiding? Neither Bran nor Mistress Alvere had said. Perhaps they did not know. If Tam and Abel had not brought the prisoners out already, it was not an easy task. He had to do it somehow, though. Then he could turn his attention to Trollocs. No one from the village had come this way in years, and the path had vanished. Yet tall trees kept the undergrowth down to a large extent. The Aiel slipped along silently, with everyone else, acceding to Mistress Alvere's insistence, that they all stay together. Loyal murmured approvingly at great oaks, or particularly tall fir trees and leatherleaf. Occasionally a mocker or redbreast sang in the trees, and once Perrin smelled a fox watching them pass. Suddenly he caught man scent that had not been there a moment before, heard a faint rustle. The Aiel tensed, crouching with spears ready. Perrin reached to his quiver. "Be at ease," Mistress Alvere said urgently, motioning for weapons to be lowered. "Please, be at ease." Abruptly, there were two men standing ahead, one tall and dark and slender to the left, the other short, stocky, and graying to the right. Both held bows with arrows nocked, ready to raise and draw, with quivers balancing the swords on their hips. Both wore cloaks that seemed to fade into the surrounding foliage.
"Warders!" Perrin exclaimed. "Why didn't you tell us there are Aes Sedai here, Mr. Salvier? Master Alvere never mentioned it either. Why?"
"Because he doesn't know," she said hurriedly. "I did not lie when I said this is women's circle business." She turned her attention to the two warders, neither of whom had relaxed an inch. "Tomas, Ivon, you know me. Put those bows down. You know I'd not bring anyone here if they meant harm."
"An Ogier," the gray-haired man said. "Aiel, a yellow-eyed man. The one the White Cloaks seek, of course. And a fierce young woman with a knife."
Perrin glanced at Fael. She held a blade ready to throw. He agreed with her this time. These might be warders, but they showed no sign of lowering their bows yet. Their faces might as well have been carved from anvils. The Aiel looked ready to begin dancing the spears without waiting to veil themselves.
"A strange group, Mistress Alvere," the older warder went on. "We shall see. Ivon?"
The slender man nodded and melted into the undergrowth. Perrin could barely hear the fellows going. Warders moved like death itself when they wanted to.
What do you mean, women's circle business? He demanded. I know White Cloaks would cause trouble if they knew about Aes Sedai, so you wouldn't want to tell Hari Coplin. But why keep it secret from the mayor, and us?
Because we agreed to, Mistress Alvear said irritably.
The irritation seemed meant in equal parts for Perrin and the warder still guarding them. There was no other word for it, with maybe a bit left over for the Aes Sedai.
They were at Watch Hill when the White Cloaks came. No one there knew who they were except the Circle there, who passed them on to us to hide. From everyone, Perrin, it's the best way to keep a secret, if only a few know. Light preserve me, I know two women who have stopped sharing their husbands' beds for fear they might talk in their sleep. We agreed to keep it secret.
Why did you decide to change that? The gray-haired warder asked in a hard voice.
For what I consider good and sufficient reasons, Tomas.
From the way she shifted her shawl, Perrin suspected she was hoping the Circle and the Aes Sedai thought so too. Rumor had it the Circle could be even harder on each other than they were on the rest of the village.
Where better to hide you, Perrin, than with Aes Sedai? Surely you aren't afraid of them, not after leaving here with one. And you will find out soon enough. You just have to trust me.
There are Aes Sedai and Aes Sedai, Perrin told her. But those he considered the worst, the Red Aja, did not bond warders. The Red Aja did not like men very much at all. This Tomas had dark, unwavering eyes. They might rush him, or better simply leave. But the warder would surely put an arrow through the first one to do something he did not like, and Perrin was ready to bet the man had more shafts handy for easy knocking. The Aiel seemed to agree. They still looked ready to spring in any direction at any moment, but they looked as if they could stand where they were until the sun froze, too. Perrin patted Fayil on the shoulder.
It will be all right, he said.
Of course it will, she replied, smiling.
She had put the knife away.
If Mistress Alvear says it, I trust her.
Perrin hoped she was right. He did not trust as many people as he once had. Not Aes Sedai, and maybe not even Maran Alvear. But maybe these Aes Sedai would help him fight Trollocs. He would trust anyone who did that. But how far could he rely on Aes Sedai? They did what they did for their own reasons. The Two Rivers was home to him, but to them, it might be a stone on a stone's board. Fayil and Maran Alvear appeared to be trusting, though, and the Aiel waited. For the moment, it seemed he had little choice.
Part 2